Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we are looking to the insurance industry with one of its biggest players in South Africa, that is Discovery Insure. As people know, you know, those that have been following the Business Day Spotlight, you know that I am a sucker for technology and a geek at heart. So, you know, hopefully we'll be understanding how Discovery is making use of technology, because in this day and age, that seems to be the way that business is moving. A lot of use of and investment in technology, you know, for various parts of how people do things. And with Discovery, you know, their Vitality product in its different aspects have been using a lot of technology. And for today, we'll hopefully get a sense of what's going on, especially, you know, on the side of Vitality Drive, that type of thing. You know, it's a nice way for us to continue, because I remember about 2 months ago, we had a conversation with Ryan Noach, who is the CEO of Discovery Health. And, you know, that, you know, was a fascinating discussion to hear how that part of the business is making use of technology. So this should be a really great engagement. We are joined by Anton Osip, who is the CEO of Discovery Insure, and it's looking to be quite a fascinating one just around what they are doing on that end. So, Anton, greetings to you today.
Hi, Madiwe. Thanks for having me on your show.
I think a good place for us to start, as always, we want to understand the organization. But when it comes to a company on the size and level of Discovery, you know, the universe of Discovery is quite big. So when we speak about Discovery Insure, you know, what are we talking about in particular?
So, Madiwe, Discovery Insure is the unit that looks after people's short-term insurance requirements. So we insure individuals, cars, homes, and other assets, as well as businesses. So we insure businesses, their cars, their buildings, their liabilities. So that's what we're covering, the short-term insurance risks that individuals and businesses have, for risks such as theft, breakage, loss, fire, you know, et cetera, accidents, obviously on vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. And the same thing for businesses, who insure their fleets, their motorbikes, their cars, their building, the stock that they're carrying, or the stock that they're holding at any point in time, and the liabilities. You know, you may be a restaurant owner, the liabilities of someone walking into a restaurant and maybe slipping and falling and the risks around that, as well as a very prominent risk at the moment, which I'm sure you know much about, is cyber risk, which is obviously very topical at the moment. And very important for small businesses to be cognizant about.
You know, I'm very glad that you have brought up this issue of cyber risk, because that is, you know, like you said, a big issue that's being spoken about at the moment. I wasn't expecting you to say that, so I'm very intrigued to understand, you know, how does one even insure against such a risk?
So all businesses are subject to cyber risk. I think there's a bit of a misconception that it's only big businesses that need to worry about cyber insurance and need to worry about cyber risk. That in fact anyone, and particularly under the under the new Poppy Act, you need to make sure that you're protecting your data very, very carefully, and you personally liable and you liable as a company for any leakage of that data. So what cyber insurance does is it gives you as a small business protection that if something happens. So for example, you're a medical practice and someone hacks into your systems because they're all connected to the internet, and effectively threatens to make your client base available on the internet and says you need to pay, you know, money for ransom to get that data back. Cyber insurance comes into play and helps you to negotiate that ransom, potentially even pay that ransom if we can't obviously do anything to prevent that loss and that risk. It brings in IT experts to come and secure your data or restore your data. Cyber insurance kicks in for that.
Now, when it comes to all of that, Anton, the issue of cyber risk is one of those things that's really sort of become pervasive over the last year. Not to say that it didn't exist before, but it seems to have become quite magnified over the last year. COVID-19, people working from home, people, you know, accessing vulnerable enterprise or business systems from less secure locations at home, you know, all of these things. And when it comes to trends that COVID-19 has sort of, you know, brought to the fore, that's one of them. But outside of, you know, the cybersecurity risk, you know, one of the big questions that I'm sure you've probably gotten over the last year is just how has COVID-19 actually affected, I guess, your particular business party when it comes to short-term insurance?
Sure. So, I mean, it's been obviously a very complex environment to operate any business. And, you know, kind of credit to every business that's been able to take their organization from working in an office to working from home, distributing across, you know, hundreds and thousands of people's homes in terms of operating a business. And our business is similar. You know, my business unit takes 7,000 phone calls every single day. And it's one thing doing it in the office with a big call center and sophisticated equipment. You know, quite challenging when you're doing it from home and people operating under extremely difficult circumstances. And I think big credit out to all, you know, employees of South Africa that have had to kind of contemplate, you know, working at home, balancing family, balancing kids from home, and still doing their job, you know, throughout the day and doing a great job at that. So I think it's been challenging. From a risk perspective, you've mentioned cyber risk, obviously something that we're watching out very, very carefully for, and assisting our customers in terms of navigating that. You know, one of the things we saw early on in the lockdown was that people's driving activity changed. So people were initially driving a lot less kilometers. And it really, you know, created a lot of innovation opportunities for companies like ourselves to reward customers for driving less. I mean, effectively incentivizing them for driving less, as we wanted everyone to really be at home and be safe. And we did that through a product feature where we effectively give people money back every single month. And we've done that from April 2020. We're still doing that today. Every single month, we haven't missed one month. And customers have got money back for driving low kilometers. So it's all about technology, as we spoke about earlier. So the less kilometers you do, the more money we can effectively pay people back. Because ultimately, our risk is proportional to the number of kilometers. So less kilometers you do is ultimately less risk for us. And therefore, we share that risk with our customers in what we call our shared value insurance model.
Anton, when you now bring in this issue of driving, I think it helps us, you know, to move, you know, quite well to this issue of, you know, shared value that you just mentioned right now. And I know that Discovery recently brought out a white paper just around, you know, the journey of creating a nation of great drivers. And you guys talk about, you know, all of these behavioral aspects. How does the model actually work? I think that's the first piece. And then the second part of that, I'm sure that for you guys to have the insights, you know, what you said just now about you notice that people are driving less and all that, there's monitoring systems in place and all that. How are you guys using the technology to actually, you know, monitor the things that you're doing to gain those insights?
Sure. So the core of the model is if we can measure people's driving accurately, and use that data to effectively assist people to understand how they're driving, whether they're driving well, whether they're driving badly, and give them the right information to help them improve their driving. We can then also take that information and create incentives to encourage better driving behavior. So that was the core of our business when we started 10 years ago. And it really followed on many, many years of experience that we've had in the Vitality business, where we've been doing something very similar. We've been encouraging people to live well, to live healthy, to focus on their wellness, and through that ultimately, you know, create a better outcome for them as individuals and for us as a health and life insurance company. So that's what we've effectively applied to the world of driving. HardWorks is effectively we make available to our customers different types of technology. The most used technology at the moment is effectively a smartphone app that we jointly, you know, created together with a company based in the United States that we partnered with about 5 or 6 years ago. And effectively, the app measures how you're driving. It also works with a piece of hardware that's connected to the windscreen of the vehicle. And it effectively ensures that we're measuring all your driving activity. And it doesn't measure when you, for example, in an Uber or in someone else's vehicle. It stops measuring. So it only measures your vehicle. It gives you all the data and tells you if you're driving recklessly, if you're driving safely. And then it gives you all that data back in real time. So after every single drive, you can see exactly how you've driven. You know, how many points did you lose for driving badly, or hopefully you'd lost no points because you drove well. We then take all that data on a daily basis. We give you a certain number of points, and we give you a target every single week. So we say your target this week is 100 points. If you make 100 points, we give you a reward. If you don't make 100 points, you obviously don't get the reward. And then we take all those points, and we at the end of the month, we translate that into a very significant financial reward that's linked to effectively the purchasing of petrol. So basically, it means the better you drive, the more petrol you get at a discount of up to 50%, which is a substantial amount of money, and effectively means that it's the cheapest possible insurance policy you can take out if you're a good driver. You won't find a cheaper insurance policy on the marketplace if you take into account the benefits you get on a weekly and a monthly basis for being a good driver. And through that, we're encouraging people to drive well. We now have close on 300,000 people on the program. We started at zero 10 years ago, and a lot of those people are driving much better than they did when they first joined us, ultimately making the road safer for me and you and everyone else that uses the roads in South Africa.
You know, when you're talking, one of the things that I noted in the paper was the fact that Discovery notes that clients have a 24% reduction in their motor accident frequency by improving their driving behavior. What does that actually mean? And, you know, what does that actually mean? And what type of behavior are we talking about that actually leads to these reductions?
Sure. So when people join the program, they immediately get data and they immediately know whether they're a good driver and a bad driver. And unfortunately, some people find that they're not as good as they thought they were. So obviously, it's a bit of a shock, you know, when you get your driving data and you think you were a great driver and it turns out that maybe there is room for improvement. And that's, you know, that's part of the journey that we take our customers on. The type of behaviors that we're measuring are things like speeding, talking on your cell phone while you're driving. You know, we all know that that's a very dangerous thing to do. It's effectively like driving blind. You know, if you're looking down at your cell phone while you're driving, it's the same thing as putting, you know, closing your eyes and driving, which you would never do. But people unfortunately do that. The minute they hear the ping on their phone, they're tempted to look down and see who called or who sent a message. And unfortunately, some people will respond to that message. So by stopping that behavior and incentivizing that behavior to stop, we keep people much better, much safer. The tailgating is another dangerous behavior where you're driving too close to the person in front of you. And if the person brakes too sharply, you're going to obviously go through the back of them. So those are some of the behaviors that we measure. We measure all the effects on the vehicle. So we measure how harshly the car's braking, how quickly it's taking a corner, how fast it's accelerating, how fast it's going relative to the speed limit on that particular road. So it's all relative to the road that you're driving on. If you're on a 60 zone versus 120 zone, obviously we have to take that into account. So we measure all of that. And then the 24% improvement in driving behavior is really a consequence of when people engage in the program and they become better drivers. That's on average what we see. Some people we see more than that. Some people we see less than that. But on average, a 24% improvement in their driving scores, which results in a significant drop in the number of accidents. The paper also talks about the rate of road fatalities that our clients experience versus versus all drivers in South Africa. And we know that South Africa has one of the highest rates of road fatalities in the world. Our clients are 40% have 40% lower vehicle mortalities compared to the rest of the world. So they're safer. We see significantly lower deaths on our client base. And in fact, our best drivers that are rated gold and above, so gold or diamond, we haven't had one fatality in 10 years. So not one road fatality in 10 years across those clients. So So it really is up to you to be a safe driver and to keep yourself and your family protected against road accidents.
You know, given what you just said, especially on the fatality side, because there are so many accidents, and, you know, one actually thinks about some of the reasoning that President Cyril Ramaphosa has given for some of the lockdowns and specific restrictions like alcohol, because he is worried about, you know, those fatalities, those road accidents, etc. One really hopes that we can get more people to improve the way that they drive, so that, you know, at some point on aggregate, we can reduce the overall fatalities on our roads, you know. So that's, I guess, kudos to the team, you know, for that. If we can inspire some, you know, some improvement in the way that people drive, that's always a good thing. But I do have a couple of curiosities, you know, just on the technology front, you know. So two, the first one is, earlier on, you said that there's a U.S. partner that you worked with when it came to your telematics sort of product, telematics app, right? Are you able to share who that partner is? And then the second bit is the phone. I'm very curious about the phone. Like, how does your system know that I'm looking at my phone?
So I'll answer the second one first. So the system knows, firstly, when you are driving versus when you are stationary, or whether you're walking, or whether you're somewhere else. So the system immediately picks up. As soon as you turn your car on and turn the ignition, it's got a very, very high frequency accelerometer that basically picks up that there's movement in the car, and therefore tells the phone to start recording the driving. You know, just getting that right is actually quite complicated. It sounds simple, but it's actually quite complicated, because you also need to do it in a way that uses very little amount of battery power on your phone, because we all know we try to preserve battery power because you don't want to have to charge your phone during the day. So all this has to be done very, very low battery use and very, very, very low data use, because we can't use much data from people's phones. It then knows when the phone is moving, because all smartphones today have something called an accelerometer. So it knows the movement in all the different directions, up and down, side, you know, whether the phone's spinning around, whether you're talking on it. All of that is picked up by taking the very high frequency readings. And given that you know a lot about technology, we measure 15 readings per second. So 15 every single second, we're measuring 15 times. So it's a high frequency of data that we actually picking up and we're recording. And you know, our job's not to police anything. It's just to incentivize. So for us, it's to incentivize you not to do that. You know, if you do that, you know, it doesn't affect your insurance in any way. But it just means you'll get less incentives if you're working on your phone. And that's the cornerstone of our program. It's not there to police you. It's there to incentivize you. And ultimately, how you behave and how you act, it's ultimately up to you. We want to incentivize you and give you rewards for doing it in a safe way. The first question you asked is, the company that we partnered with is called Cambridge Mobile Telematics. So Cambridge Mobile Telematics, they call themselves CMT. They're based in Cambridge, in Boston, Massachusetts. And they emerged out of the MIT stable, so out of the MIT Technology College, obviously one of the best in the world. And it's a company that we met about 6 years ago. At the time, they had 12 employees, and we're really just getting off the ground. We were one of their first investors in the business. Today, they employ close to 400 people, and they're involved in about 30 different countries around the world, and all their different programs, telematics programs that they run. So it's been an incredible success story as a new startup in America. And we're very proud to have been, you know, very, very closely working with them, you know, every single, you know, literally or every step of the way since we met them, you know, 6 years ago.
You know, the vehicle telematics space is actually one of those that I've actually followed for a couple of years now. With the likes of Mixed Telematics, you've got Netstar, you know, CarTrack, and all of that. And there really does seem to be some good piece of technology that are coming out. Do you find yourselves, this is a very geeky question, but the device that you guys put in the car, because other people will have, you know, a small device that actually connects to the, what do you call this, to like the central computer system of a car, right? Why didn't you guys choose to take that approach?
So we chose not to use the OBD port, which is what you're referring to, the OBD2 port of the car. There are various reasons. In some cars, there's a lot of inconsistencies with how those ports operate. It's, you know, can be quite an inconvenient experience for customers to have to plug it in. And sometimes, you know, it's easy to have it, you know, kicked out if you kind of driving, because it's in a very, strange place sometimes in the vehicle. The device we chose, is self-powered. So it's connected to the windscreen. It can be installed by clients themselves. So you don't have to be a technical expert to install it. It doesn't therefore use the battery of the car at all. So it has no impact on the battery. So you can have it in your car for days, for months. It's going to have no impact on the battery. So we decided that we wanted to self-power the device. At the time, it was a big decision that we took, because it needed a lot of engineering to be able to have a device that's on your windscreen and that lasts a number of years. You know, you're not charging it, you're not plugging it in. You know, it's not like a cell phone that you're plugging it in every night. It actually sits on the windscreen and it can last for 2 or 3 years before it needs to be changed. There's a huge amount of engineering that's gone into that, and we've developed a number of other features around that piece of technology. And I can give you some examples. So we developed a different version of it that's not on the windscreen. It's somewhere else in the vehicle. It's in a place difficult to find. And it's used as a device that we can use to track where the vehicle is. We use the device as a way of working out if someone else is driving your car and you're not driving your car. We can pick up the driving pattern. You drive in a certain way. You know, maybe someone steals your car, they drive it in a different way. We can pick that up and we can phone you to say, are you okay? We're picking up an unusual driving pattern coming from your vehicle. We haven't seen anyone else in the world that's ever done that before. So that's quite a unique feature to us in South Africa here at Discovery. We're constantly developing new technology together with our partner CMT. We're in the process now of actually launching or rolling out a video camera that effectively is more for the trucking industry, where it's a camera that records what's happening inside the cabin of the vehicle, and it records what's happening outside of the vehicle. So it's got a front and backward facing camera, and it measures all the things I've spoken about, all the driving behaviors, and it allows you to basically see what happened, you know, in the event of an accident. So this is very useful for if you're running a fleet. Just say you got 10 cars on the road and you're a plumbing company and you want to see what your plumbers are doing, you know, how they're driving. Or if they have an accident, they want to prove that they're not responsible for the accident. It was actually someone else that caused the accident. This data is quite useful for you as a company to have. So, and we also be doing it in a way that doesn't cost you an arm and a leg, because these technology video cameras that are out there in the marketplace are tens of thousands of rands, some of them, and too expensive for the average sort of customer to afford. So we've done it in a way that costs much, much less.
You know, as we go through all the different technologies that you guys are using, you know, just in the car alone, because at the beginning you mentioned all the various things that you guys are ensuring, and right now all we're talking about is driving. I'm very interested then. Can you talk to us about what the investment in the technology is looking like in the background? If there's a number to quantify there, that we're all for it. If you can't share the number, you know, it's all right, but we like numbers because we're business people. But like, what does that investment actually look like?
I can't give you the actual number in terms of rands that we're investing, but I can tell you it's substantial. I can also mention that probably our whole technology infrastructure within just our business alone, so excluding the wider Discovery Group that has big RT departments and big RT teams, but just our investment in telematics technology, RT development, and related functions is in excess of 200 people. So that's how many people we have working on it. We have engineers, you know, all sorts of disciplines of engineers that are working on hardware and software at any point in time and looking to develop new pieces of technology. There's no other insurance company that has a team like that focused on this function. We're totally unique. Both in South Africa and globally, you know, companies partner with company, you know, with technology companies. We've actually built a lot of that expertise in-house because it's so close to what we do. We operate a 24-hour call center that deals with emergencies. So one of the most common things they do is if the device, the technology device that I've mentioned, or the telematics device can pick up that you've had an accident, 24 hours a day, we'll call you to find out if you're okay. And if we can't get hold of you, we'll send out an ambulance immediately. So that's something that you don't get from any other insurance company. So there's a huge amount of differentiators and unique set of value propositions that we have within our offering that's not available by any other insurance company. And I think it's important for customers to know that, because some people feel that one insurance company is the same as another insurance company. They're all the same. That's actually couldn't be further from the truth. There's massive amounts of differentiation between different insurance companies.
And also tied to that, can you also then talk to us about the other parts of the investment? Because I'm now thinking about, you know, do you guys have your own data centers? Are you, you know, using other people's data centers? Are you guys manufacturing these devices by yourselves? Is there a partner involved? Like, yeah, can you talk to us about that?
Sure. So on the data side, it's a combination of on-premises data centers. So we run quite sophisticated data centers with, you know, lots of individual and lots of investment into those data centers. We also use, for certain types of data where it's appropriate, we use cloud-based data centers. So we use Amazon Web Services and other clouds as required from time to time, depending on the need. From a hardware development perspective, we do some of the R&D ourselves. So in fact, in our building in Sandton, we have a lab where some of the devices are actually built and the prototypes are built. And then we go use different providers who will then manufacture it in high volume. So we've got a big infrastructure in the US, you know, in conjunction with our partner CMT, where they can manufacture, you know, thousands and thousands of these devices on a daily basis using robotics technology. So we developed a robot effectively that can take all the pieces and make sure it's done with precision and quickly. And that's how we obviously can keep the costs of these devices down, as opposed to making them by hand. So it's a combination of work that we do, work that CMT does, and work that our partners that we jointly use do. So it's really a combination.
No, it really does sound like, you know, there's a lot going on. And I guess, you know, sometimes when you are driving in Sandton and you look at the big glass building, you're not quite sure what's going on. But I think right now we're getting a little bit of insight into what's actually happening. You know, inside that building, there's labs. You know, I did not know there were labs. Now I know that there are labs. And, you know, we've got some of these devices that are being manufactured there. Now, being an insurer, and being part of the wider financial services sort of sector, it means that you guys are highly regulated, you know, just by nature of, you know, what the financial services industry is like. So from that point of view, do you guys have to get those types of approvals from regulators and the like before you're able to implement these types of technologies? Because I can imagine that, you know, that might be a consideration.
Yes, absolutely. So we're very regulated. This industry in South Africa is very sophisticated. Regulation that can really stand up to anywhere in the world, from both a capital perspective, to ensuring that we have sufficient capital to ultimately pay the claims of our customers. That's what the regulator obviously is very concerned about, that we treat customers fairly at every step of the way. So there's a huge amount of regulation. You know, the technology has its own set of regulations. So we comply with the security industry because we're operating in certain aspects of the security industry, so we comply with that. From a telecommunications perspective, because some of these devices have telecommunications type functionality, so obviously we need to have the right approvals from that perspective. So it's complicated as we go into that. But first and foremost, we are an insurance company, so we're regulated by the Prudential Authority and the Financial Services Conduct Authority. So both those regulators covering different parts of regulation. Obviously we work very closely with them to ensure that everything we do is within both the spirit and the actual sort of extent of legislation.
Before we end off the conversation, I just wanted to take you back to this issue of the driving behavior that you were mentioning earlier on. And I was just wondering, just from the research and the data that you guys have been able to gather, because you guys do service businesses on one end, people that have, you know, drivers and all of that. But at the same time, you also have a direct relationship with, like, on the consumer sort of side. Do you find that you're able to influence behavior more on the consumer or fleet side? Because at least on the consumer side, you have that direct relationship with the driver versus if it's servicing a small business or a guy who has, let's say, 20 trucks or something, he sort of has to look after his drivers. You guys don't necessarily have that direct relationship. How can you talk to us about those dynamics?
Yeah, I mean, it's an excellent question because there are very different dynamics. And we've developed the program to really cater for those dynamics. So as you say, we've got a direct relationship with the consumer. It's easy for us to communicate directly to that individual. And, you know, the individuals respond quite well to that direct communication. On the fleet side, we're dependent on an advisor that we work with. So we only work with advisors on the commercial side, and we're dependent on the company itself taking it seriously to encourage their clients, their drivers, to drive well. And you see a diverse experience. So companies that realize that ultimately it is their responsibility to ensure that their drivers drive well. If their drivers don't drive well, ultimately it's going to have an impact on their business. Their insurance is going to be more expensive. Their trucks are not going to be on the road operational. So they're going to have more trucks available because at any point in time, there's trucks that are being repaired because they've had accidents. And it disrupts business. You know, imagine you're a delivery company and a percentage of your trucks are always having accidents. You know, that's going to impact your deliveries. It's going to impact your brand. So companies that take it seriously and use our program and all the tools that we provide in our program see an incredible result. We provide incentives for the driver. So not the company itself, but actually the person driving the vehicle gets an incentive to drive well. And we provide an incentive for the company. So there's a two-way incentivization program where with consumers, it's just incentivizing the driver because the driver and the policyholder is typically the same person. So that's where the difference comes in. But I can tell you the companies that take it seriously have seen a dramatic drop in their rate of accidents. And they've got a huge amount of money back because the incentives we provide are up to 30% of your premium back on a yearly basis. So we've got companies that are getting effectively a 30% reduction on their insurance costs because they're encouraging their clients, their drivers to drive well. Plus, they're having obviously more productivity because they don't have cars that are out of action. So it's a call, I think, for all fleet owners, fleet managers, for all company owners to really understand that, you know, if they put it doesn't, you know, you don't need a huge amount of effort because we've provided all the tools and the technology to make it happen. But if you take a bit of interest and make sure that the messages get down to the drivers, you can really influence your bottom line while impacting your reputation at the same time.
Yeah, no, that one really does seem like an important one, especially if you're able to communicate to a business that the better that your drivers drive, you know, the better that it is going to affect your bottom line, because a lot of the time people don't care about some of these things. But if you can communicate it in terms that they do understand that, you know, this thing might save you money, the better that your drivers, you know, drive, you know, less, I guess, mechanical costs, less insurance costs, you know, all of those things. Yeah, so from that point of view, I certainly understand, you know, the way that you guys have structured that. My last two points. First one, just coming back to the issue of cybersecurity insurance that you mentioned earlier on. I think over the last 2 weeks, at least just before the 1st of July, people were receiving messages, emails upon emails upon emails about Poppy and, the enactment of that act. Though it's been around for about a year, the fact that people now have to be compliant with Poppy and all of that, do you think that's going to be a driver? Because Poppy is more about data protection, but, you know, people are really, you know, concerned about cybersecurity at the moment. Do you think, the act and all of this noise that's being made around cybersecurity, do you think all of that is going to drive interest in people taking on things like cybersecurity insurance?
Absolutely. I think it's going to become mainstream. I think companies are going to realize that This is, you know, you wouldn't have a business and you know, not take out fire insurance to cover your buildings. I think companies will realize that you can't have a business and not take out cyber insurance as well. And take all the relevant steps to ensure that you're protecting your data from a data protection perspective, from a POPI perspective. So it's a given. You know, I think a lot of companies, you know, really towards the last few weeks before the 1st of July, there was a huge amount of activity that happened across companies to ensure that they were ready for the deadline on the 1st of July. And I think some companies are still kind of, you know, making sure that they've completed everything when they're at the right point. But definitely cyber insurance, I think, is going to become center stage.
And then on the last point, because I do agree with you, until you said it, I don't know why I'd never, you know, it had never been one of those things that's come to mind, cybersecurity insurance. You know, I do see, you know, that there's likely an opportunity that more people, individuals and also business people are going to be taking this on. So definitely excited to see what that space is going to look like. But on a last point, given everything that we've spoken about, you guys are clearly, you know, investing a lot in the technology and using a lot of technology to service your clients and to actually offer the type of products that you are doing. Are there any interesting trends that you are excited about or that you're seeing, you know, on the horizon? Because I'm sure that, you know, when you guys first started out versus now, the type of things you were able to do back then, it's now different because the technology has advanced. So from that point of view, what are you seeing or what are you excited about?
I think what we're excited about is consumers are realizing that this is in their interest, that being safer is really in the interest for them and their family, and their families, and we're giving really tools for them to be able to take advantage of it, save money at the same time by really being incentivized to drive well and ultimately get the cheapest possible insurance for good drivers. So there's a financial benefit. There's a kind of a rational or emotional benefit because it makes sense to keep safe. And I think we're seeing also that brokers and intermediaries that play a very significant role in the industry. You know, still vast majority of customers purchase insurance through an insurance broker. So at the beginning, it was quite different. The business that we launched 10 years ago, now we deal with pretty much all brokers in the country that have business with Discovery Insure. They're becoming more and more familiar with it. They understand how the program works, understand that they can also play a role in encouraging and insisting people to understand what good driving is all about. So it becomes an ecosystem of everyone really working together to ultimately achieve the same goal, which is creating a nation of great drivers. And I think if we get to that point, we'll have one of the safest roads. We'll have some of the safest roads to drive on. You know, we're making also sure that the road surface is as good as possible through our pothole patrol initiative, which you may have heard about, where we're fixing, you know, hundreds of potholes on a daily basis. So we're trying to make sure that all different stakeholders are working together to ultimately save lives, because that's the real goal for us. We want to, you know, look back in many years' time and know that South African roads are safe. We've saved many, many lives through the process, and people, you know, are just better off for having dealt with us than not. So that's really the kind of the goal of the business. We're excited about it. The first 10 years has been about building the business, about ensuring that people understand what we do. The next 10 years, I believe, is going to be even more exciting than the last 10 were.
So that was us. We're with Anton Ossip. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Discovery Insure. He says that they are the business unit that handles short-term insurance. And one of their big things at the moment is they're on a mission to try and improve the way that people in South Africa drive, because it is a big issue, you know, from vehicle insurance and the number of fatalities that are, you know, happening on our roads. They're saying that they're using their technology as a way to monitor the way that people drive, so that they can tell people how they do drive and actually incentivize people to drive better. He says, obviously, you can't drive on behalf of a client, but you can incentivize them to drive better. And over time, they've been able to see tangible results, you know, such as a 24% reduction reduction in, you know, some of the accident rates amongst their client base based on some of these issues. And we also spoke a lot about the investment and use of technology, the telematics. We went into quite a lot of detail into how they're monitoring the way that people drive, speed, using your phone and all that. Really quite exciting. And also just highlighting the issue of cybersecurity and, you know, some of those risks going forward and how cybersecurity insurance is likely to become a something that's mainstream, especially with the way that that type of risk is on the rise around the world, but especially in South Africa. So that's been it for this edition. Anton, thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you so much, Madiba. Have a good day.
This is Madiba's Take.
I think at this point, you know, I'm really curious and would want to take a deep dive into Discovery's books just to find out how much money these people are spending on their technology, particularly their research and development. Because, like I said at the beginning, we had a previous conversation with Ryan, who is the head of Discovery Health. And we heard a lot just around, you know, the millions that they're spending on research, development, and their technology. And today we hear from Anton saying that, you know, on the insure side, they also, you know, the investment is significant. Usually terms like that tell you that, you know, people are spending into the hundreds of millions just on some of this technology. And it makes sense, especially in this environment where the likes of Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, you know, have crossed $1 trillion in terms of their valuation. And one can only imagine the billions that are going into their research and development. And if you're a Discovery and you're trying to compete on a South African and also global level, you need to be spending those millions, those billions on research and development. The technology is important, these platforms, and making the type of technology that just blends or fades into the background, that's usually the best. And it is quite interesting to hear. I'm particularly interested in that cybersecurity aspect. I do think that what Anton is saying, you know, will, you know, come to be realized, the fact that cybersecurity insurance will become mainstream, and also just using technology to actually change the way that people, you know, behave. Who knows what type of developments? For all we know, we might be having another conversation in future where the likes of Discovery or another company has come up with a way to make surfing on the internet or operating online safer, where, you know, if you use two-factor authentication or if you, enable these types of plugins or disable those types of plugins, you get rewards for better or safer internet behavior. Actually, that's actually a really good business idea. You know, maybe, you know, someone should look into something like that. But like I said, very interested to continue having, you know, these discussions, because technology important. It is a driver. It is where the world is going. So going forward, it will be good to get Anton back again, you know, just to hear about how they're using technology in the other parts of their business. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.